Good evening and welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule and my guest tonight is musician Michael Schulte. Michael Schulte has been described as an elegantly accomplished violinist with smooth virtuosity by Hamilton music critic Hugh Fraser. Pursuing an early interest in orchestral music, he was concertmaster for 4 university orchestras. Michael has played as soloist with orchestras including the Winnipeg Symphony and the Toronto Philharmonia. Also a violist, piccolo cellist, conductor, and teacher, Michael's musical focus is chamber music performance, presentation, and education. He has performed and recorded the quintet repertoire with groups like the Fine Arts Quartet, the American String Quartet, the Miro Quartet, the Lafayette Quartet, the New Orford Quartet, the Parker Quartet, etc. Michael taught at the Southern Ontario Chamber Music Institute for 8 years and directed his own string quartet, Camp. He teaches for McMaster University and directs the Schulte Chamber Players, numerously awarded Ontario's Best by OMFA. He directs an ad hoc touring ensemble for Chamber Music Hamilton called Insight. Michael commissioned the construction of 2 ancient string instruments and does concerts and tours with his rare violoncello, Piccolo di Spalla. You'll have to say that again for us. Michael has played and conducted much of his wife, Abigail Richardson Schulte's music for CBC Broadcast and has performed her violin concerto with 5 Canadian orchestras. He likes to perform with the Turini Schulte Dom Trio and other groups on an occasional basis. Michael has crossed the 10-year mark as director of Chamber Music Hamilton. Wow. Welcome to Art Waves, Michael Schulte.
Thank you. Thank you, Bernadette.
I'm glad we finally made this happen. It's taken a while to get you on Art Waves. How many instruments do you play altogether? Have you ever counted?
Well, if you count things like kazoo and various recorders and... I have a huge collection of instruments, but you know, a lot of them don't require a huge amount of study. But I mean, you've heard me play the piccolo cello, so you know I do play a whole bunch of instruments. So yes, how many do I play? I play 5-string violin. I have one. I play a viola quite a lot professionally. I play violin. It's my original instrument. Piccolo cello, I play piano, and then I play other things like theremin, etc.
Oh, you do play the theremin?
I do, yeah.
My guest from this past week also played plays the theremin.
Oh, really? Who's that?
His name is Stan White, and he's a 90-year-old poet who wants to keep his brain sharp, so he learned the musical saw and the theremin.
Oh, that's sweet. I love it.
Yeah, he's great.
And that's smart, too, because, they've put electrodes on people's brains and found that playing classical music lights up more of the brain than anything else in both hemispheres, you see. And so when you're older, the corpus callosum that connects the brain halves deteriorates and you have less information passing back and forth, right? But if you activate both halves of the brain that much, you get a lot of traffic again, which builds it up, strengthens it, keeps people sharp more than anything else, apparently.
Yeah, well, it is true when I think of all the people that I know who play classical music in particular, but musicians as well. It really, they are incredibly sharp right into old age. And
that's a good point, yeah.
Something we should all be doing, I guess. So you have a great future ahead of you, Michael. You're just a child now.
I think I'll always be just a child. That's the problem.
Oh, that may be your secret. I don't know. So you started with the violin first. How old were you when you learned to play it?
Well, I was 9, which is not especially young for violin. It's one of those things that you want to start as early as possible. But by that point already, for years, in fact, I had listened to the great repertoire on my dad's great record collection. And I memorized music very, very easily. So, my parents were kind of surprised when they heard me sing entire symphonic movements from memory, right? Because I had just been listening to those recordings.
That is incredible. So you were really little when they noticed you could do this.
Yes. And then when they first got me a violin, I remember we unpacked it. I remember it all so clearly. It was a little quarter-size violin, you know, for an absolute thimble-sized person that I was. I mean, I was sort of 9 going on 4. And so then my dad and I unpacked the violin, and there was no rosin on the bow, and we didn't know that you needed to put this tree sap on the bow to make it do anything, right?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So we're handing it back and forth. It wasn't even that. We're taking it from each other, trying to get some sound out of it. And my dad said, no, give that to me. I'll do this. And so he tries it. And again, there's no sound. And I said, no, let me try it. No sound. And I opened up the case, and there was this little cube of the tree sap. And I said, well, you know, maybe we should put some of this on the bone. And I remember my dad saying, no, that's silly. I put a bit on, and wow, it made sound.
That is amazing that you even thought to figure that out. You know, we truly underestimate the brilliance of small children. And you weren't even that small at 9, but as you said, 9 going on 4. That's great. So you had violin lessons starting at age 9, and then that's continued correct. Your lessons for the rest of your life?
No. Let me see. I guess I continued lessons through my master's years, and then I don't believe I had any formal lessons after that. But you know, I still continue to learn a lot, and still do, right? Which I'm quite pleased about. And then of course I learned a lot from the people I played with, right? Like I played with Marta Hedy and friends, and Marta Hedy was a significant teacher of mine for many years. And then, and she was a major Hungarian soloist. You know, she played in her heyday, up to 8 Beethoven concertos in a single week, right? She came in second at the, you know, I think 53 Wieniawski competition, and you know, placed, I think, 3rd at the Prague International String Quartet competition with the Marta Hedy Quartet, things like this. I mean, she was a Hungarian international soloist, and her mission, she had a mission to spread Hungarian music around the world, which she did. But then in the 56th revolution, she and her family on New Year's actually did the Von Trapp family thing from The Sound of Music and climbed over the Alps and left to Austria. You know, and then she ended up in Canada, first Winnipeg, then here in Hamilton, and I studied with her here.
Okay, so are you originally from Hamilton, Michael Schulte?
Well, yeah, I basically am, you know, I'm the mushroom that stays home. Well, you know, I live in Dundas, actually, as you know, just down the street from you. I rather like it. You know, it's an hour out from the States, hour out from Toronto. Everything else is in the radius. I spent a lot of time in Germany. I spent time here and there. But I found myself happily gravitating back here, and this is where I'm based. Yeah.
Okay, so your parents must be German with Schulte.
Absolutely right. My dad taught German literature and philosophy at McMaster, and my mother taught German language there. And so my point, I mean, it took me a while to get to it, was that even after I finished formal lessons, I gained a lot by playing with Marta Hedy and friends. You know, we played for 8 years, and of course, I was still fairly young, and she, except for me, had all these major senior players from the old guard scene, great players, and I ended up playing even also in ensembles with them. I had for a while, I played with Daniel Dome, who was Chicago Symphony principal cellist, and Leonard Bernstein had him play Tchaikovsky Rococo variations with New York Philharmonic when he was 15 and so on. He won the Tchaikovsky competition in Moscow, major, major player. But somehow we hit it off, and we played in a trio together for years with Ronald Torini, the great pianist who's still alive. And also with Tsaliakov and Gisela Devcat and so on. I had a bunch of interesting groups, and you know, you learn a lot from other players. And so that hopefully you don't sort of park the brain and just go on autopilot, which is, I might add, a danger when you're playing in orchestras. You know, it's quite possible to, start and be the student of the conductor in the orchestra, but not actually grow in one's own skills.
So you're saying you could kind of get caught in a rut in an orchestra.
You really can, but I think you probably can in any field, right?
Oh, sure. So Michael Schulte, your father did not know about rosining a bow, but was he was he or your mother musical?
Yeah, good question. My dad was, without a question. He didn't have the high level training, unfortunately. But he was quite a competent pianist. He's still around, and he's, you know, too old and arthritic to play now. But, you know, I grew up hearing a lot of Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, Mendelssohn, Brahms, etc. He would play a lot. And of course, we would listen a lot. He had a great record collection.
Yes, of course, as you mentioned before. What about your mother? Did she play any instruments?
My mother played a number of recorders, soprano and alto and even tenor. She liked to sing. She liked to sing Schubert, I remember, when she would be cooking in the kitchen. but there was no musical background with her, let's say.
My gosh. Well, you know, I can see how a child like you developed to become a musician in that atmosphere, though, you know, like
I get the good point. Yeah, right.
Yeah, wonderful. Okay, so.
Oh, interestingly, my sister. Sorry, Bernadette.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
She didn't. My parents really tried with her too. You know, piano and flute and cello and so on. But she didn't take to it at all. So, music is one of those things, right? The talent, it's kind of a gift, you know.
Yes, it's definitely a gift, and also the interest, the passion.
Right, and you want to combine those, and because one without the other, it's not going to lead to high level playing.
Okay, well, Michael Schulte, you mentioned that you've kept learning all your life, though not formally in education training or whatever, but you are also a teacher. And I found myself that teaching is the best way in the world to learn when you have to teach other people.
Isn't it true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, you would be continually growing and learning.
Yes. Because when you have to discuss and reflect on a subject and articulate verbally what is communicated in an abstract art form like music, you know, you have continuous revelations about things, right? You have to, because you have to communicate these things in order to teach them.
Yes, indeed. And I can only apply that to literature. I can't apply it to music, but I have certainly seen that that is true. How often do you have to practice to keep yourself fit as a musician?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think it's different for different people. You know, Anna-Sophie Mutter, the great German violinist, says she never practices more than an hour a day. Of course, she put in the heavy lifting in her early years. You know, gosh, Jascha Heifetz practiced for a long time. Everybody has their own way. It's like writing music. Mozart, it just sort of poured from his head through a pencil and onto paper, and that was it. He never revised a note. Whereas Beethoven, you know, you can look at his sketchbooks and see 11 pages of scribbles just to come up with two bars of the Opus 59 string quartet, number one string quartet.
Right. Yeah.
So everybody has their way, and one isn't better than another. As for myself, I'm a hands-on kind of a teacher, so I'm playing a lot when I teach.
Right? Okay.
So I'm playing quite a lot, whether I'm performing, teaching, practicing, whatever, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And then of course I practice whatever I need to play more as deadlines approach, as concerts approach.
Right. Well, you know, honestly, it looks from your bio and from hearing you talk, it looks like music is your whole life. Of course, you're married to the wonderful Abigail Richardson Schulte, who is a composer herself.
And a good one. And she's doing very, very well on the Canadian scene and has pieces that are going to France. And
yeah, she's wonderful. Now, do you compose as well, Michael Schulte?
At times, you know, put in my influences with her work, but I don't. I mean, I used to when I was young, but I haven't in a while, and it's something I want to get back to, but there it is, you know. So it's one of these things on the back burner.
Okay. What is the, just a quick question here, a quick answer, please. We don't want to spend too much time on it. What's the thing you do in your life that is the furthest away from music?
Well, yeah, it's a good question, because I think musicians need something other, because we put music into the air and then it's so ephemeral, it's gone. There's no trace of it, you know, so we want something concrete. So, you know, I like things like photography. I enjoy that a lot. You know, I get to keep a picture. You get to keep that, you know, and I like a carpentry. I love to build, furniture and shelving, and I've built some very interesting things, actually.
Oh, such as musical instruments?
Oh, I have not built musical instruments, not serious ones.
When you say you've built some interesting things, what, can you give us an example?
Oh, well, you know, gosh, okay, Bernadette, you should see my cupboards.
Oh, you made those. Okay,
yeah.
So listeners to Art Waves, he's giving me a little virtual tour of his place, and my goodness, I see all sorts of amazing artwork. That wasn't a Bob Yates back there, was it? On the wall? Did you do that? Did you do that piece on the wall?
Did which piece was that? Oh yes, no, that's, you know what that is? You're talking about this.
It looks like a Bob Yates.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? You know what it is? So I lacquered the black background here, and then I got a piece of apple wood from the market. And it's a beautiful piece, isn't it?
And it is.
It stands quite a bit off, and it ends up a handle, right?
Huh? He just opened a cupboard with his piece of sculpture on the wall.
And it's not something.
That is so clever. Lovely. Piece of abstract art just hanging on the wall. Okay, I get the picture here. This is amazing.
Look at this, Bernadette. Have a look at that. That's...
this your bookshelves?
Yeah. And it contains a lot of stuff. A computer workstation and a hidden tool station. And there's a keyboard in the back end there. It's all concealed and you can use it when you need to. But it's one of those things.
And it looks like you're sitting in front of a green wall or something kind of musical for us. So
it's a carved wall. This was quite an undertaking to build.
And you did this?
Yes, with help, I did this, yes.
Wow. Yeah, he's sitting in front of a kind of sculptured curved wall that has circles in sort of like squares in patterns on it. It's really quite lovely. I thought maybe it was a recording sound studio or something.
Yeah, people ask that, yeah.
Yeah, everything about you looks musical. It's interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, that almost looked like a, what are those S-curved things?
The F-holes. Are you talking about the F-holes in the string instruments?
Well, it kind of looks like an F-hole too, but I'm thinking of the treble clef, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
The piece that was hanging on the wall that turns out to be a cupboard handle. Okay, well, I knew this would get too exciting if we got deep into it. So let's get back to your music. Do you want to play us a little short piece so people can hear possibly that one of the crazy instruments you have commissioned?
Oh, absolutely. That would be my pleasure. For instance, let me show you. I have this violoncello piccolo da Spalla. You've seen me play this, in fact, right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting thing. This particular one is an exact replica of the one Bach commissioned from Johann Christian Hoffmann in Leipzig in 1736. Amazing.
Wow.
And, it's been... It disappeared about 250 years ago. But these things were around for a long time, and they were much more prevalent in Europe than even the modern cellos, right, which came up from Italy later. And it took them forever to get the modern cellos figured out with the end pin, right? In fact, mid-1800s, they were still sitting on the ground or da gamba, you know, on the knees or between the knees, and then finally they got the end pin worked out, and it's a fabulous instrument, right? So much more practical than this thing. It's no surprise that this disappeared when it...
Yes, this is a large, heavy, unwieldy looking like a violin on steroids or something.
Yes, that's right. It's like the world's biggest viola. It has cello proportions. And if you listen to this, it has cello depth. You know, these strings are in the cello range.
Oh.
So, okay, I will play, I'll play Prelude to the First Cello Suite by Bach, made very popular by Yo-Yo Ma. You know, many people know it.
Beautiful. You know, Michael Schulte, never since the pandemic began have I been sorrier not to be able to be in the Mohawk studio with their superior sound quality, because unfortunately doing this on Zoom is not going to do it proper credit. But what a beautiful piece of music that is. I've always been very in awe of people who can play it because of the little slight hesitation between phrases, especially at the beginning. I just keep thinking, how do you get that timing so perfect every time, you know? Brilliant. And so now you commissioned the violoncello Piccolo di Spalla, and you had explained to me when I talked to you about this the first time in person that di Spalla means shoulder, is that right?
Yeah, it does. It's a funny word, actually. Violoncello Piccolo. So, you know, when this thing was invented, they had these violons, which were enormous bass instruments. I mean, they're long gone. It's not quite true. They've actually hired two of them at Montreal Symphony, which is really funny. But they're humongous and twice as deep as string basses. You know, these huge string instruments that you stand and play and growl? Yes. Yeah. So this is just, this is an enormous thing. And it goes back to, you know, early Baroque times. And then, so that's the violon. Now, the violoncello, cello actually is a diminutive in Italian. So you had the little violon, of course, a regular big cello, which is now, you know, a substantial bass instrument.
Yeah.
was tiny compared to the violon. So it's the little violon, violoncello, piccolo, it's almost redundant, meaning especially small, because this one is even smaller than a cello, da spalla, which means played on the shoulder, like a violin. So it's the little cello that is played like a violin. Violoncello piccolo da spalla.
Well, it looks so difficult. I don't know how you hold it up for so long. And
I have, Buddy Araf says it's the most difficult instrument in the whole world to play. And it cripples you if you play it too much. So that's the thing, you know, you have to watch out.
I can imagine that you would end up with a wry neck if you played that too often.
You have to be in shape. You actually have to be in shape. Otherwise, everything hurts.
Yeah. So you do a little bit of working out or exercise?
Oh, absolutely. You know, through COVID, it's quite funny. Abby and I were, you know, doing 15 to half hour workouts to YouTube every morning. We have to keep in shape, you know, and everybody doesn't.
And you haven't been able to play live much since this started, right? Things have been canceled.
That's right. Absolutely. My gosh, the concert season is just decimated, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's sad.
My series, Chamber Music Hamilton, I mean, I'm supposed to have the Ying Quartet. I have them booked to come on November 8th. But let's face it, what are the odds that the American border is going to be open? It's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
So, you know, I have to move them yet again. And I've got the Shanghai Quartet booked for January 24th. And, you know, I've got the Quartetto di Cremona from Italy coming also later in the season. But I can't see any of these things happening. What do you think?
No, I'm losing heart. You know, I really feel like it's going to be much longer than we thought originally.
But those dates are worth something, right? I've got the pavilion at the Art Gallery of Hamilton for those dates. So I will fill those dates with other fun and interesting concerts, but not with groups coming from other countries, obviously.
Right. And as you say, there are many fine players around here.
It's a global pitch. You're quite right, you know.
Yeah. And everybody hungry to play, you know. So
very true. Good point, too.
You should be able to manage it, but it is really, really difficult for sure. Okay, now that wasn't the only type of musical instrument you had built for you. By the way, who made it for you?
Oh, you know, okay. The late great Carole Grégoire, that's his name. He was from Montreal. And okay. He was a cello player who went to my Scholte music camp, you see. And we were fast friends there. And he specialized in building these old instruments. He also built, you know, violino basso, viola pomposa, things like this. And, he, you know, I had heard... This is what happened 2 years before that. I'd heard a radio broadcast from the Smithsonian, and they had an original violoncello piccolo da spalla, and we're talking about it, and then a fellow played it. And I thought, oh my goodness, I could probably play this thing with my violin technique. Now, if I started to play a cello, which is a totally different thing, you know, would I at this stage ever get really good at it? No, it's too different from violin. But this, you know, uses violin technique, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that is a reasonable thing. If I had one of those, then I can, because I play violin and viola, so I might as well play cello too. You know? And that's kind of funny because I play all these things, and I play with the New Orford Quartet sometimes, and one of their violinists, Andrew Wan, is concertmaster of Montreal Symphony, and he told me just jokingly that they have a violon opening at Montreal Symphony, which is that enormous, ridiculous bass instrument. Whether I might be interested to play that there,
and you're like, would I?
I'd have to find one. That would be a tall order. Again, it would take me a couple of years to find somebody to build it, because that's what happened here. I heard that, and then I put the word out, and the makers would say, "Wow, that's a very interesting proposition, but I can't risk it because I'd have to build everything, the molds, the plates, you know." Right. And since nobody knows about the instrument, I've got the only one in Canada.
This does not surprise me, Michael Scholte.
You know, so then they wouldn't be able to sell them because nobody knows about them. So it's just, it's too much of a risk. So nobody was willing to undertake it, except for Carole Grégoire.
And why was he, I wonder?
Well, I think, you know, he was a fan of mine and a friend of mine and enthusiastic, and there it was, you know. He's just that kind of a person. You know, it was quite shocking when he died, and a lot of us came together. I drove out there to, you know, to Montreal. You know, we did a memorial service for him. He was very special. He was very generous.
When did he die?
That's a good question. It's a while ago now. It must be maybe 7 years ago, something like that.
7 years ago. Okay, so he was older than you.
Carole Grégoire, very much so. Yeah, he's retired. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, how wonderful that he was willing to do that and that you have done so much with the instrument. I'll just tell our listeners, if you've tuned in recently here, this is Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Ruhl, and my guest tonight is the remarkable musician Michael Schulte. So, Michael, we're going to have to wind it up pretty soon, which is just awful to think about. when I first got these questions together for you almost a year ago now, I think, I've been chasing you down for quite a while. You know, I said, where can people hear you play? Well, that's a little more tricky now, but not completely, as you've just explained. There are places. So can you give us a sense of that?
Well, when we get rolling again, you know, I'll do a recital, and maybe you can tell your listeners when that is. Does that make sense?
Happy to do that. Happy to do that. But you, as you say, you have your series.
I often play also, you know. Okay. Let me see. So on November 8th, let's face it, I won't be able to bring in the Ying Quartet. So therefore, you know, I've got that time frame, so I'll put on something interesting.
You'll let me know, and I'll let our listeners know.
Yeah, that's it. So we'll do something cool on November 8th at the Art Gallery of Hamilton at 2:00. That's a Sunday.
All right. So listeners, if you really want to know, you can always go to Michael Schulte's website, right?
Actually, you know, Chamber Music Hamilton.
Oh, Chamber Music Hamilton, sure.
Hamilton, yeah. Chambermusichamilton.ca. That's worth a visit. You know, I wrote up comprehensive descriptions of these fabulous groups that I present. I bring them in from all around the world, and it really is a special treat. It really is a special treat. People in Toronto say, oh my gosh, your series is better than anything we have here.
Can you tell us again the name of your series?
Chamber Music Hamilton.
Oh, just your Chamber Music Hamilton series. Okay.
Yeah, and guess what? Guess what? That series has been around for so long, in fact, since the 1800s in various incarnations. It's one of the earliest, you know, in North America. It's really quite surprising.
That is very cool. Hamilton has so many of these things that are really the first.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? I mean, Hamilton is kind of a young city in that you have all people bursting with creativity and everybody's willing to try everything. And I love that. It's not inhibited. It's uninhibited. But then, you know, there is also this series, which is, you know, sort of grand old, really high end. It's interesting.
The best, yes, indeed. You can have it all in Hamilton. And I wonder if it isn't because of our rapist lunch bucket city, that we don't take ourselves so seriously that we're afraid to try things.
You're probably onto something there. It's identity. The identity of this city has always been in flux somehow. Once it graduated from, you know, graduated, maybe that's the wrong way to put it. I'm sure it's the wrong way to put it. Once it changed from the lunch bucket.
The steel town.
Yeah,
for sure. It was a most dynamic, interesting place to live. I have to agree with you about that. So, Michael Schulte, what can you possibly have left to accomplish in your amazing career?
Oh, that's sweet. But, you know, these things are hard to say. We all only have the perspective that we have in our little boxes, and our lives unfold as they do, right? So, and I feel I'm opening myself up right now to, I don't know what, to transformations and possibilities and so on. So, you know, what my future in performing and teaching and presenting will be, I think isn't written yet. Let me say that, you know. I think it's sure. The best way I can put it. I don't have a locked in plan based on what I now know. I have a funny feeling in a few years I'll be a different person. So that person will have different needs.
Well, I hope you won't. I hope you won't be a different person because you're an amazing person as you are.
Thank you.
Absolutely fascinating, really. Okay, now I always ask my guests to bring in a piece of music that we can close with. And tonight we're going to have you close with one that you're going to play live for us. Are you going to?
Yeah. I mean, I was hoping actually, I'm working up this great Stravinsky piece with Shoshana Telner. It's a barnstormer, but since we're doing it COVID style and, you know, she hasn't sent me her part yet. So I was hoping to have that ready. It's not ready. So okay. In the absence of that, I will just play, what will I play? Maybe a few notes of a Mozart concerto, something like that.
That sounds beautiful. So it looks like you've picked up a regular violin here. So this is not one of your wild and crazy ancient period instruments.
Right.
But it's a beauty.
Oh, it is. This is a Scarampella. This is something very special.
What is it called again?
Stefano Scarampella. It's over 100 years old, Italian.
Yeah. It looks like the violin in the movie, The Red Violin. It's quite a dark.
It does, doesn't it? You're right. It looks. The people call it The Red Violin. It looks very much like that. It's quite funny.
Yeah, all I can imagine is that someone's blood was, you know, rubbed into the.
I hope not.
Well, I'm just going back to the movie. Okay, so you're going to play a piece from Mozart to close us out with tonight. Before we start that piece, do you have any final thoughts for our Art Waves listeners?
Oh, gosh. What kind of thoughts would those be?
Well, any advice about people who are interested in music?
Oh, I think, you know, Chamber Music Hamilton is kind of one of these best kept secrets. It is such a fantastic series because the quality of the music and the groups that play them is scoured from the world over. Mm-hmm. We're talking about absolute top stuff with signatures of sound generated from nationalities all around the world. Very, very special. And you don't have to be an expert by any stretch. In fact, you never have had to hear a string quartet. You come out, you sit down, tickets are $35 for adults, $15 for students, which is, I might add, super cheap, because if you go to Music Toronto, you're paying over twice that, and you buy a ticket to the Philharmonic, you're paying over twice that. So, you know, it's a great deal.
True.
And the thing is, they cost so much more than we get through ticket revenues, right? It's just a small fraction of it. It's all, we make it happen through grants and donations and, you know, board hustling up, these sorts of things. But it's here, and it's a very special thing.
Yes.
Just come out, listen to a concert, and just, you know, just let the music come over you. And, you know, most concerts get big standing ovations and people are ecstatic about them.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. But so it's the insiders that know that keep coming, and it tends to be the same bunch, right? So
yes.
It'd be good to get the word out on that. That's my... That's all I have to say. And otherwise, everybody stay healthy and safe. And
okay. Well, just before you begin, let's get the name of what you're going to play. You said you're going to do a Mozart piece.
Yeah. This is, I won't play the whole thing because it's a whole violin concerto. I mean, I'll give you a couple minutes or so of the Mozart Violin Concerto number 3. He was 20 when he wrote it.
Oh, my gosh.
Filled with youthful vigor and enthusiasm.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, before you start, Michael Schulte, let me thank you for being here. It's been wonderful to talk to you, as I knew it would be. And I'm really grateful that you gave us this time. And sure. I'd like to thank our listeners as well, always, for tuning in. And I really, really appreciate you checking out Art Waves every week. And Remember, you can always go to archive.org/details/artwaves and listen to podcasts of past programs. We hope that you'll do that with this one as well. It will be aired live August 2nd, Sunday, 7 p.m., 1015 The Hawk. And thank you so much. I hope you can join us for that. And until then, this is Bernadette Rule wishing you a good night on the shores of Lake Ontario. Thank you.
Thank you.